She had taken off his dirty little things and covered him over with her own petticoat, with the crochet trimming. Bessie and the doctor were still working over the child when Zalman came in. At sight of her in his house, he jumped with gladness.
"You golden heart! You're sent from heaven to my sick child!" he cried, grabbing her arm.
Bessie shuddered from his touch as if a snake had bitten her. But when she bent over Benny to make him take the medicine, she was all tenderness again.
"Mother? Are you my mother?"
whispered Benny, putting his arms around her and in his weakness trying to hug her.
"Your child has been eating food that poisoned him."
And the doctor pointed to an opened can of beans on the table.
"They won't have to live on canned eating anymore," said Zalman, winking at the doctor and snuffing tobacco up his nose. "She's coming to cook for me and take care of my house."
The doctor didn't speak. He only looked at Bessie, and there was understanding on his quiet face. From that evening on, a change came over Bessie. She never could warm up to the fish peddler, but she stopped fighting father in his plans for the marriage. When the wedding day came, she went quietly from our house to Zalman's. The burden bearer had changed her burden. Chapter 7. Father becomes a businessman in America.
"In America, a man can get rich quick if he only has a head for business," said father, as he counted out the $500 that Zalman the fish peddler had given him.
"A head for business in America," mother laughed into father's face, "is the same head you got to have for business in Russia. You showed me enough already how smart you are. Why not better earn a living by what you know? Get a job as a rabbi in a synagogue. Religion is your business."
"What? Sell my religion for money? Become a false prophet to the Americanized Jews? No, my religion is not for sale. I only want to go into business so as to keep sacred my religion. I want to get into some quick money-making thing that will not take up too many hours a day, so I could get most of my time for learning."
And rolling up the bills, he pushed them into his pocket.
"The while, put the money in the bank," mother begged.
"I got to have the cash ready in case I see some good bargain to buy quick."
And out he went. An hour later, father came back, waving a fresh printed copy of the Ghetto News.
"Here's the bargain I've been looking for."
And he read,
"A bargain for cash. Leaving for Europe tomorrow, must have cash today, will sell my long-established grocery in Elizabeth, New Jersey, worth $4,000 for $400. Only the man with ready cash need come." Father squared his shoulders and grew tall with joy. "I'm off to seize my luck by the horns."
He slapped the bulging roll of bills and laughed to himself, his chin in the air.
"In America, there is no need to be poor, if you only got brains and money to begin something."
He held up the sheet to see again the address.
"In America, the bargains are so thick the newspapers are all full of them. Other people have made fortunes in America. Why shouldn't I? It's only fools who remain poor. I'll go at once and see the place."
But mother dragged him back. "Let me only go along. Two heads are better than one."
"But, woman, I must first find out what there is to buy."
Mother clutched at both his hands.
"In God's name, let me only hold the money. In my stocking it is safer than in your pocket."
He pushed her back and started for the door.
"Yidna! Does a man of brains need a woman's stocking to hold his money for him?"
"Promise me only,"
wailed mother, running after him down the stairs. "Promise me that you won't pay out the money till I come to see what you buy."
"Sure," he called back over the banisters. "If it's only the bargain it says, I'll send quick for you."
And hurried on, his face shining, his head in the air, as though Rockefeller's millions were already burning in his pockets. We just sat down to eat our supper when the boy from the drugstore came.
"Mrs. Smolinski," he said, "your husband phoned you should come to this address."
And he handed us a paper containing the street number and how to get there. We were too excited to eat another bite. We left the food standing on the table, hurriedly dressed ourselves, and went to Elizabeth. It was 8 o'clock when we got there.
The store was lighted in great style. The outside of the windows were full of sales signs, and the place hummed with business. Customers were going in and customers were going out loaded with groceries. Father stood near the cash box, rubbing his hands with joy as the owner took in the money for the sales. After a while, Father introduced us to the owner of the store. The man bowed quickly and went on waiting on customers.
"Two hands are not enough," he said. "I could use two more clerks." "Well, I'll have my wife and girl to help me," answered Father.
Mother kept gazing around the store, drinking in the full packed shelves of cereals, canned goods, soap, and washing powder. The place seemed overflowing with goods. "Does he really ask only $400 for all this?" Mother whispered to Father. "Ask him to give you a pencil and paper so I can begin to count up all the goods there is in stock."
"Can't you see he's too busy with the customers to stop for such things now? Wait till after closing time."
"Such a smart businessman he looks," Mother went on, "and the store hums with trade. Why does he let go such a good thing?"
"He wants to go back to the old country, to see his relations and show off to the neighbors how much money he made in America," answered Father.
The customers kept coming and coming, pushing and elbowing each other to be waited upon first. But at 9 o'clock by the watch, the man refused to sell any more.
"Come again tomorrow,"
he told them as he pushed them out and locked the door. Then he went back to the cash box to count the money.
$78.89. The man smilingly put the money in his pocket. "Not so bad for a plain Monday, eh?"
"Do you still take in more on other days?"
began Father. But Mother jerked him by the sleeve, not to talk how good the bargain was, for fear we should lose it.
"My man tells me you are giving up the business to go to Russia."
"That's it," the man nodded.
$400 you want for the store?" questioned Mother.
"No, let us first count up the stock and see what you offer to sell."
The man opened his eyes on Mother.
"Sell? Offer?
I've got nothing to offer. I sold this store to your husband at 5 o'clock, with the agreement that he was to take possession of it at 9.
"So," breathed Mother in astonishment, "the store is ours already?"
"It sure is," answered the man, as he quickly unlocked the door, threw the key to Father, and walked out.
"So you bought the store already without asking me," cried Mother, hitting Father on the head playfully. "For once in your life you had more luck than brains."
"What a wife. Even when I show her I got brains, she is so jealous she calls it only luck."
"No, my smart man, call it brains. But why didn't you let your own wife have the pleasure of buying together our new business? You could have waited till I came."
"Wait? I wanted to wait, my woman who bosses me. I wanted you to see for yourself with what a quick head I can make a big business deal. But if I would have waited, the bargain would have been snatched out of my hands. For when I came here, there was another man to buy the store. He was here before me and also with cash in his hand."
"Then how did you get ahead of him?"
"Because the other man was an Italian, and the owner sold me the bargain only because I was a Jew."
Father began dancing around the store, crazy with joy.
"And such a bargain! Look only around this full-packed store. Who would not grab such a chance, quick? Think only, $78.89 in one day. In 1 week, 7 times $78.89. Pshaw! We will have to hire a bookkeeper to count up for us all our profits a year."
"Gott sei Dank!"
Tears of thankfulness blurred Mother's eyes. "The sun is beginning to shine for us. After all our black years, we live to see our own bought store in America." And in her excitement, she threw her arms around Father's neck and kissed him on both cheeks.
"Ach, we'll yet be people in this new world."
Gladness flowed from Mother to Father like a living sun.
"We're going to save a penny to a penny and a dollar to a dollar, so that a year from now we'll have the money for our own bought house, with steam heat and hot running water and a white marble sink."
Higher and higher flew her happiness. "And I'm going to show you how well I know what beautiful is. I'll fix up the parlor with carpet on the floor, and a red velvet set, and lace curtains tied on the side with red satin ribbon.
But first we must buy a golden wine glass with silver candlesticks for the Sabbath."
Father stroked Mother's hair with new tenderness.
"Woman who bosses me, don't you think the first $100 we ought to take to give away to charity, so as to thank God for our luck.
Mother pushed back father's hand in playful affection.
Meshugana Yid, you with your charities, why can't you let the money warm itself by us a little?
How can you ever become a businessman in America if the minute you get a few dollars in one hand, you want to give it away with the other to charity?
As I looked at father and mother playing with the joy of a business of their own, I thought to myself, if only there was plenty of money between them, how happy they would be together,
fighting in fun instead of nagging and galling each other fighting over pennies.
And I thought to myself, now all the food we'll need will be right with us in the store, and mother wouldn't have to eat out her heart bargaining at the pushcarts and spending hours in the market to save a few cents. And she'll stop her worries, stop her cursing and hollering, and be a mother like other mothers.
I looked about me.
Ah, what plenty to eat!
My mouth began to water at sight of a whole tubful of butter, all our own, butter for bread day and night, and the best of eggs from now on.
And with $78.89 coming in every day, we'll soon be able to buy a piano, and I'll begin to take piano lessons. And if I were a piano player instead of a shop hand, I wouldn't have to marry myself to a common man like my sisters. I'll try to catch on to a doctor, or a lawyer, or maybe an actor on the stage. And if my husband were an actor, then I could go to the theater free every night.
Full of my dreams, I stepped over to the window. There was a great pile of oatmeal boxes that had been stacked up to make a fancy pyramid, but the man selling them off had broken into it and spoiled the even lines on both sides. So I started to fix it up again in proper shape, but reaching over, some way, I knocked the whole pile down and it tumbled to the floor and the boxes went rolling everywhere.
"Crazy, what have you done?" cried my mother,
and both she and father bent down to pick them up. Mother and father raised themselves up with boxes in each hand. On mother's face came an expression as if she held something bewitched. Slowly she lifted the boxes up and down. Then she turned on father.
"Businessman, what are you holding in your hands?"
Father stared puzzled at the boxes, as if to read the label.
"It says it's oatmeal, but it must be marked wrong. Maybe it's that feathery puffed rice."
Mother shook her box close to her ear.
"Businessman, what have you? You got air in your hand."
And she tore open the box and held emptiness before father's eyes.
"How could they be empty?" said he, puzzled. "Didn't I see him selling them?"
"Fool!"
Mother turned upon him.
"Couldn't he have had full ones on the top of the pile to sell from?"
And she kicked the boxes on the floor till she found one with something in it.
"See, here is one more he could have sold. One more has oatmeal in it."
Father began to try each empty box in the hope of finding another one with something in it.
"Blind yok!"
shrieked mother.
"Stop playing with air. Let's at least see what a great bargain you grabbed."
And she and I began tearing around the store to examine the stock, while father stared blankly at us. The shelves had goods only in the front row. The whole space behind was empty. Mother stabbed a knife into the tub of butter and hit into hard wood beneath the thin spread which had been plastered against the fake wooden bottom. I picked up the top layer of a newly opened case of eggs and found only empty paper fillers beneath. Beside the almost empty barrel of sugar stood another sugar barrel, not yet opened.
"What's this?" asked mother. "It's sugar."
Father came forward hopefully.
"I pushed it myself to see it was full."
"Full of what?" mother glared at him. I knocked it open with a hatchet. A barrel full of sawdust stared up at us. I dug into the barrel and pulled out a brick. Half the night we worked to see the extent of the great business deal that father snatched with such mad haste. Not only were the shelves faked with emptiness, the window full of dummies, but worse yet. We began to read the signs on the windows that shouted aloud bargains in the store in red and black letters. But only now we had sense enough to put two and two together, and saw that oatmeal was marked 2 boxes for 15 cents when one alone cost 10 cents. Ketchup 7 cents when it should sell for 15 cents.
Eggs that even on the pushcart sold for 30 cents were, in that grand bargain window, marked a quarter.
"No wonder the customers pushed on each other, rushing to buy in this store," Mother wailed. "What women would not kill each other, crowding to a store where they could get ketchup for 7 cents when it cost 15 cents? The wonder by me is that my smart husband didn't give that swindler the chance to take in the cash for another day when he could have sold the empty boxes full of air for oatmeal and the barrels full of sawdust for sugar."
And such a born gentleman he looked. And so smart he talked.
Father stared with his innocent eyes into space.
"A gentleman!" shrieked Mother. "A crook! A thief! A rattlesnake! Why are we standing around here like fools? Aren't there policemen, judges, courts of justice in America? We'll arrest the robber. Where does he live? What's his name?"
"Name? Live?"
Father opened his innocent, wide eyes like a child.
"I paid him cash because he said he had to go right away to Russia."
"Justice in America," sighed Mother. "There is justice nowhere for a fool.
A fool they whip even in the holy temple."
We did not go home, but slept that night in the room in back of the store. In the morning, we took out the signs that were marked down below cost. Father stood himself at the empty cash box, ready to ring up the cash, and Mother and I stood ready to wait on customers. At last a customer came, a woman for a bag of salt, and then came a little girl for a box of crackers. But she didn't buy them, for her mother had given her only 4 cents, and we had marked the crackers back to 5 cents. About 9 o'clock, a young man walked in and looked about with a funny smile on his face.
"Good morning, mister. I'm glad you came," said Father, extending a friendly hand to the visitor. "I had news, and maybe I'll have to go soon to my daughter in California."
"Well," replied the man, "there's not much to keep you here."
"Of course I could leave my wife and daughter in the store, but you know women have long hair and small brains. It needs a man's head to run a business. If I had a good customer, I think I'd rather sell my store. So if you're still looking to buy it..."
"Me?" The man pointed to himself. "Me buy this store? What kind of a sucker do you think I am?"
"But only yesterday you had the cash in your hand and you were so anxious to buy. Only that man didn't want to sell to an Italian. I'm not so narrow-minded. I'll sell to any gentleman with cash."
"You won't sell it to me, Uncle Abe."
The man laughed into Father's face.
"The roll of $1 bills that I had yesterday with a 50 on the outside belonged to my late employer, the gentleman who sold you this store. I offered to buy it and displayed this roll 6 times yesterday before you came, but you were the man we had been waiting for all day. I wouldn't be telling you this, but the dirty skunk double-crossed me and beat it last night without giving me my share."
"Ay, they!"
Mother dug her hands in her hair wildly.
"We're robbed, swindled. Our blood, our life, all our money gone."
And then, at sight of the man puffing his cigarette so calmly, she rushed at him.
"Quick, Sarah, run for a policeman to arrest this crook."
I started for the door, but the young man pushed by me, bowing politely.
"Don't bother, little girl. I wouldn't have come here if the cops could have anything on me. I was only a clerk, and I had to do what the boss told me."
He tipped his hat and walked away like he owned the earth. We stood staring after him, dumb with helplessness. With drawn face, Mother turned back to the store where Father sat with his hands folded, a look of childlike bewilderment in his wide, innocent eyes.
"Woe is me! Bitter is me! We're ruined!"
Mother shook her fist in Father's face.
"Gaslin! That's what you get for not listening to me. If you had only let me go along as I begged myself by you, you would not be mooning now over a cash box as empty of cash as that sawdust barrel was empty of sugar."
"We live to learn," said Father hopefully. "Next time I'll know better."
"But you never learn better. You only learn to be a worse fool."
"How could I dream that the man was such a crook? He made me feel such faith in him. I was ready to give him not only the $400, I would have given him $4,000 if only I had it. I would have given him my whole life."
Why do you never trust your own wife? Why do you only trust strange people?
You think I'm like you? Mistrusting everybody? I trust people. The whole world is built on trust. The bank, the mines, the government could never exist unless people trusted each other.
Oh, of all the troubles on earth, is there anything so terrible as to have to live with a fool?
For a moment, Father dropped his head, almost touched by Mother's cries. Then he pushed up his shoulders and shook off his sadness.
There's nothing so bad that maybe it couldn't yet be worse. Maybe instead of losing the money, I could yet have broken my leg or got myself killed. Maybe God let me off with the mere loss of money to spare me a worse misfortune. Woman, if only you had a little understanding of life, you would thank God for his mercy on us.
Listen to him only. Mother's cries shook through the house. All our money gone. Starvation stares us in the face. And yet he wants me to thank God for his mercy on us.
In her excited anger, she grabbed Father by the front of his coat, trying to shake him out of his calmness.
Guslin, now that the girls are married and no wages coming in, what shall we live on?
But Father, calmer than ever, gently loosened Mother's hands.
The God that feeds the worms under the stone and the fishes in the sea, will he not feed us? Always you tried to frighten me with your hollering, wolf, but the wolf never came. Sometimes we had a little less to eat, sometimes a little more. But we haven't starved yet. The wheel of life is always turning. What is down today will turn up tomorrow.
Mother rocked her head in her hands.
How can the lost $400 ever turn up again? A fool throws a stone in the water, and 10 smart men can't fish it out. To whom will you now turn for help?
Father's face became alive with light. He towered over Mother like an ancient prophet that had just stepped out of the Bible.
Have you forgotten the undying words of our race? The Lord is my shepherd. No want shall I know. When all other human help is gone, then God himself steps out of his high heaven to help us. This man who robbed me only pushed me closer into the arms of God. Now I know that everything that happens to us is from God, for our good.
And that is why I'm so deeply buried in the ground by you, wailed Mother, because you turn all your worries on to God.
Mother began hitting her head against the wall and crying.
I can't stand it from him anymore. I can't. I can't.
And Father rushed over to her and tried to quiet her.
Foolish Yidna! Why are you getting yourself so excited over nothing? What's loss of money, anyway? You know the old saying, money lost, nothing lost, hope lost, all is lost. The less money I have, the more I live on hope. And hope is the only reality here on Earth. It's hope that makes people build cities and span bridges and send ships from one end of the Earth to another. Even dying, man plants his hope on the next world.
My gall is bursting. My flesh is falling from me in pieces listening to him. A man lets himself be swindled of his last penny and he throws yet salt on his own wounds, talking on hope.
Nag! Nudnik!
Father turned upon Mother.
Stop making me miserable. You are always looking for worries, so now you got something to worry about. God sends always to the spinner his flax, and to the drinker his wine, and to the woman who is looking for worries something to worry about.
Gewalt! To whom can I go with my bitter heart? I'm living with a madman that ought to be tied up with ropes.
Stop your yelling, commanded Father.
Ishara!
Worry yourself in your own head. Don't holler on me. I know the money is lost. Do I need yet a steam whistle to shout this to me? Suppose Rockefeller or Morgan would stop to worry every time they made a little mistake in business. Big men grow wise through their mistakes. It's only women who have nothing to think about who waste themselves tearing their hair over little losses that are past and done with. If you don't stop this nagging this very minute, I'll leave this house and never come back again.
Go! Go! Shrieked Mother. Never come back to darken my days. At least a few years before my end, I want to be free from you. If I were only a widow, people would pity themselves on me. But with you around, they think I got a bread-giver when what I have is a stone-giver. Go, Go from me, blind lunatic. You haven't sense enough to tie a cat's tail.
But Father made no move to go. Instead, they went right on arguing and shouting at each other. And even long after Father was asleep, Mother kept on wringing her hands and going over and over our terrible loss. Chapter 8. The Hard Heart. How could we help ourselves? All we had was sunk in this empty fake of a store. Still, it was a place to start with something. And so we moved to a lonesome street at the edge of a dead town and lived out there at the back of the store, hoping with nothing to hope with. Our fainting hearts still prayed for a miracle to save us. While I was busy fixing the place, Mother was out bargaining with the wholesalers to trust her with enough goods to restock the store. Always she managed to push by the little people and get herself into the private office of the big man at the head of the business. Catching hold of the man's hands, in the fire of her great need, she clung to him till he heard out all her troubles of an empty store. And so she burned into a man's eyes her pleading to be trusted, that one after another gave her goods on time. After a while it seemed that Father and Mother could make a go of the store, but how could I stand the empty deadness of the place? Ah, the loneliness of that little town, and the cold, stiff people there. It was like living among walking chunks of ice. The each-for-himself look froze me to the bone. Hours passed before a customer would step in for a bar of soap or a loaf of bread. As I listened to the ticking of the clock, each minute of each hour seemed like the ashes of a thousand years slowly smothering me. I wanted back the mornings going to work, and the evenings from work, the crowd sweeping you on like waves of a beating sea, the shop, the roar of the rushing machines, the drive and the thrill of doing things faster and faster, the pay envelope, the joyous feel of money where every little penny was earned with your own hands. What would become of me if I remained out here, day in and day out, without friends? My arms would wither at my sides. I'd forget how to shake hands. My tongue would grow dumb in my mouth. And all my longing for people would shrink in my frozen heart. Mother had just come back from New York, loaded with packages. Till the goods would be sent, she had grabbed from the wholesalers a few samples of everything she could possibly carry. She tossed the things on the counter and dropped into a chair by the window. She lay back, closed her eyes, and a grateful, rested look came into her face. "God should only be merciful and help us work up the store," she gasped, mopping her face with a corner of her shawl. "After all, it's the first time since we came to America that we have a little light and air. When I look out of the window, it's not into a black air shaft. I see a tree, the sky, green grass."
"There's a lot of grass in the cemetery, too," I cried.
But Mother was so drunk with the green grass and the blue sky, she was deaf and blind to my bitterness. "Once we only get the goods we need, people will come running to us, as to a bargain counter," she said, softly, as if she were floating on air.
"No, so Father will have more money to pay to his lodges and to send to the starving Russians, while we'll be slaving away for him."
Shah,
Mother shook her head at me.
"How could you have married such a crazy lunatic as Father?"
I burst out. "A daughter to talk that way of her own father?" She stared in horror at me. "Even if he was a drunkard and a card player, you owe him respect."
"I can't respect a man who lives on the blood of his wife and children. If you had any sense, you'd arrest him for not supporting you."
"Arrest a man who is the light of the world? A man innocent as a child and harmless as an angel?" Our arguing was cut short as a customer came in. He was a wooden-faced American farmer, with sunburn on his cheeks and neck, and the smell of the barn on him. We leaped forward in one breath and asked what he wanted.
"A pound of coffee," he ordered.
Then he asked for a loaf of bread, and we put it beside his coffee.
"A bag of sugar."
A worried fear came into Mother's face.
"Oh, sugar,"
she hesitated.
We're out of sugar just now. It hasn't been sent yet.
All right, said the man grouchily. Give me a gallon of syrup.
How could we tell the man that we hadn't such things in stock?
We stared at him like guilty criminals. At last I found my voice and said fearfully,
We're out of syrup, too.
With a black frown, he pushed back the packages.
I have to get everything in one place, he growled.
All the air of hope went out of our hearts as the man turned and walked away. We just wilted into silence, unable to meet one another's eyes. After a while, another man entered. Again, hope rose in us, but he was only a passerby who came for a match to light his pipe. Mother busied herself dusting the poor little stock set in front of the empty shelves, while I yawned and waited in maddening idleness. Then a little boy trailed in and asked for a penny lollipop.
Mother will pay you after, he said, shoving the candy into his mouth.
So dull with discouragement was I that I even forgot to ask him who his mother was till he was out of the store, and when I ran after him, he pointed to a woman coming toward us with a basket. I smiled my best welcome to the new customer, but she pushed by me stiffly, and with a scolding face threw on the counter a package of oatmeal that was moldy, and ketchup and canned milk that had gone bad.
I got them at your cheating bargain sale, she cried. Give me my money back or new goods.
The store had not been ours when she had bought her things, but we got so scared at the woman's railing, fearing she would drive away other customers, Mother gave her fresh goods. It was lucky that the woman got out just before Father came in. Shining with godliness from his day of prayer, he went straight to the cash box to count out the money we had taken in. Carefully, he folded every paper dollar and put it in his pocket, leaving only pennies and nickels for change. I wondered, had Mother seen? But she went on busily, filling small paper bags with salt. Turning to Father, she asked him to weigh them out. As he lifted with his butter fingers the first bag to put it on the scale, the paper burst and the salt spilled to the floor.
Ach! He kicked the salt with his foot. The grocery business is only for thicknecks and truck drivers. Such long hours of brainless drudgery is only for grubby grinds who have no high thoughts to think out.
He looked far out into space, and almost a sadness came into his eyes.
I'm sorry I didn't go into the banking business, he sighed. A banker works only from 10 to 3. The rest of the time I'd have for thinking out the thoughts in my head.
Lunatic! Shrieked Mother. You, without a shekel to your name! Why do you only want to be a banker? Wouldn't it be better if you tried to make yourself for the President of America?
Woman, how do you suppose Rockefeller, or Morgan, or any of those millionaires made their start in America? They all began with empty hands. Their only capital was hope, courage to work out their ideas. I got a million burning ideas flying through my head, but I'm cursed with a wife who hangs like a stone on my neck. A nag, a nudnik that blots out my sunshine.
But Father's face brightened as a customer entered, a young, college-looking fellow. Father pushed Mother and me aside and came forward to the man. He liked to show us how to wait on customers.
A box of bran, please, said the man.
Bran? For what do you need such a thing?
Asked Father bossily.
Breakfast food bran, the man answered coldly.
Bran for breakfast? Such things you only hear in this crazy America.
Father began to preach his smartness into the man's neck.
By us home in Schnippischok, they gave bran to horses and cattle. But Americans are such fools they make eating out of it. This is a sensible store. We don't keep such nonsense.
Mother stood there, holding her breath, her eyes jumping out of her head toward Father. Then, turning quickly, she rushed forward with a package of bran. But the insulted man had already gone.
Mother shook the bran in Father's face.
Woe is me! My eyes dry out of my head till I see a customer come, and you drive them away like a madman.
You want to teach me how to talk to people? Woman, stay in your place. You're smart enough to bargain with the fish peddler, but I'm the head of this business.
With his big finger, he pointed to the kitchen.
Go back to your cook stove. I'll run this store.
While Father was preaching Mother back into her place, a girl came in for a pound of rice.
When she went to pay, she had only 10 cents. The rice is 12 cents, I told her. Can I have it now? I just live next door and I'll bring back the 2 cents later.
I handed Father the 10 cents, saying it was for a pound of rice. Crazy! Where was your head? Don't you know yet rice is 12 cents?
I trusted her the 2 cents.
Without asking me? I'm the one to decide who is to be trusted.
But you're never here. You're away praying most of the time.
Hold your mouth. You're talking too much.
Why do you make such a holler on me over 2 cents, when you yourself gave away $400 to a crook for empty shelves?
Blood and iron! How dare you question your father his business? What's the world coming to in this wild America? No respect for fathers, no fear of God.
His eyes flamed as he shook his fist at me.
Only dare open your mouth to me again. Here I struggle to work up a business, and she gives away all the profits of my goods. No heart, no conscience. 2 cents here and 2 cents there. That's how all my hard-earned dollars bleed away.
Oh, God. 2 cents.
My gall burst in me.
For 17 years I had stood his preaching and his bullying, but now all the hammering hell that I had to listen to since I was born cracked my brain. His heartlessness to Mother, his pitiless driving away Bessie's only chance to love, bargaining away Fanya to a gambler and Masha to a diamond faker, when they each had the luck to win lovers of their own. All these tyrannies crashed over me. Should I let him crush me as he crushed them? No. This is America, where children are people. I can't stand it. I can't, I cried, rushing to the back of the store. 2 cents! 2 cents! All that cursing and thundering over 2 cents! Blindly, I grabbed my things together into a bundle. I didn't care where I was going or what would become of me, only to break away from my black life, only not to hear Father's preaching voice again. As I put on my hat and coat, I saw Mother, clutching at her heart in helplessness, her sorrowful eyes gazing at me. All the suffering of her years was in the dumb look she turned on me. Bending over, she took out from her stocking the red handkerchief with the knot that held her saved-up rent money, and without a word, she pushed it into my hand. As I came through the door with my bundle, Father caught sight of me. "What's this?" he asked. "Where are you going?" "I'm going back to work. In New York."
"What? Wild head? Without asking? Without consulting your father, you get yourself ready to go? Do you yet know that I want you to work in New York? Let's first count out your car fare to home every night. Maybe it will cost so much there wouldn't be anything left from your wages."
"But I'm not coming home."
"What? A daughter of mine, only 17 years old, not home at night?"
"I'll go to Bessie or Masha."
"Masha is starving poor, and you know how crowded it is by Bessie."
"If there's no place for me by my sisters, I'll find a place by strangers."
"A young girl? Alone? Among strangers? Do you know what's going on in the world? No girl can live without a father or a husband to look out for her. It says in the Torah, only through a man has a woman an existence. Only through a man can a woman enter heaven."
"I'm smart enough to look out for myself. It's a new life now. In America, women don't need men to boss them."
"Blut und Eisen. They ought to put you in a madhouse till you're cured of your crazy nonsense."
Always before, when Father began the drum of his preaching on me, my will was squelched. But now he saw the stony hardness of my eyes, and suddenly his whole face saddened with the hurt of a wounded martyr, suffering his righteousness.
"Is this your thanks for all your father did for you?"
he pleaded with the gentle patience of a holy one.
"Where do you find a poor father who has done for his children as much as I? I didn't cripple you. I didn't give you consumption. I didn't send you to work at the age of 6 like some poor fathers do. You didn't start work till you were over 10. Now when I begin to have a little use from you, you want to run away and live for yourself?"
"I've got to live my own life. It's enough that Mother and the others lived for you."
"Chutzpah, you brazen one. The crime of crimes against God, daring your will against your father's will. In olden times, the whole city would have stoned you."
"Thank God I'm not living in olden times. Thank God I'm living in America. You made the lives of the other children. I'm going to make my own life.
You hard heart. You soul of stone. You're the curse from all my children. They all honored and obeyed their father.
And what's their end? Look at them now. You think I'll slave for you till my braids grow gray? Wait till you find me another fish peddler to sell me out in marriage? You think I'm a fool like Bessie? No. No.
Wild with all that was choked in me since I was born, my eyes burned into my father's eyes.
My will is as strong as yours. I'm going to live my own life. Nobody can stop me. I'm not from the old country. I'm American.
You blasphemer!
His hand flung out and struck my cheek.
Denier of God! I'll teach you respect for the law!
I leaped back and dashed for the door. The old world had struck its last on me.
Chapter 9. Bread Givers. All the way on the train to New York, Father's curses still rang in my ears. The flame of his eyes scorched their bitter wrath into my eyes. The hand with which he struck me still burned on my cheek.
New York, all out!
The conductor shook my arm and shouted in my ears.
All out!
I stared about. The train was nearly empty. Oh, I'm here already in New York. I tried to pull myself up from my thoughts.
Bessie! I was going to Bessie.
It was 9 o'clock when I got to Zalman's fish store. The shouting and bargaining for the holiday fish were enough to burst the ceiling. Zalman stood on one side, surrounded by a crowd of women, Bessie on the other side with another crowd. Sweat streamed from Bessie's and Zalman's twisted faces as they fought for their life with the bargaining yentas.
Robber! Cried an old, wrinkled woman with a shawl over her head. 10 cents you ask for carp. By Cohen's, it's only 9 cents. Not such goods like by me.
Zalman lifted a fish in his black, hairy hand and waved it before the woman's eyes.
Give a look only on my beautiful carp. It jumps with life yet.
But, swindler, my husband sweats blood for every penny. Why do you squeeze from me the last cent?
You think I steal my goods? And I got to pay rent.
No, have a little mercy in your heart.
The woman clutched at his arm wildly.
28 cents for 3 pounds?
29 cents, and not a penny less.
He put the fish on the scale and quickly tried to throw it into the woman's basket.
Thief! She shrieked. You're skinning me in the weight!
Kushanyerka! Out from here! Worms should eat you!
And he turned from her to another customer. I elbowed my way to where Bessie was. Her thin arms were covered with the gummy scales of the fish. Her face, her hair, and her apron were thick with it. So buried to the neck in fish was she that she couldn't hear me or see me.
Only another little fish yet for good measure, pleaded a woman,
snatching up a squashed flounder.
I have 11 hungry mouths to feed. It's already over the weight, cried Bessie, tearing the fish out of the woman's hand. Go to the charities if you want fish for nothing.
The woman moved away, muttering curses. There was such famine-squeezed emptiness in her eyes that it hurt to look at her. I could stand the bargaining no longer and walked to the back of the store. But even in the far room I could hear the haggling and the cursing, the tearing at each other's throats for pennies. I looked about me, at the grand married life that Father had grabbed for Bessie. 5 boys sleeping on 1 mattress on the floor. Yenta on a narrow lounge. That place in the corner, with the ragged green curtains, Zalman's and Bessie's bedroom. No place for me here. But I was so tired my eyes could hold open no longer. Leaning my head over my hands on the table, I fell asleep.
What's this? What brought you here?
I opened my eyes and saw Zalman and Bessie standing over me.
I left home,
I blurted out, now wide awake.
What?
Zalman yawned into my face.
You'd better go right straight back then. A girl's place is under her father's hand.
Sha!
Bessie put herself between him and me.
It's too late to go back tonight.
Then right back in the morning.
A nice example you'd be for my daughter.
And he stumbled away to the bedroom.
Bessie put her hand over my shoulder.
Go to sleep with Yenta, and tomorrow we'll talk.
Her head dropped to the side, and her body seemed to double over as she dragged herself to bed. I looked at the fat Yenta on the narrow lounge. I could see no room for me. But I was so thin, and I crawled up to the edge and slowly worked a place for my feet to rest. But I scarcely had fallen asleep when I was dumped to the floor as Yenta turned over with a sleepy grunt. There was no use to try the lounge again. I sat down wearily on a chair. Bessie tiptoed over to me. With her finger on her lips, she motioned for me to follow. Out of doors, we sat down on the step.
What happened?
She whispered, slipping her hand into mine.
Father, I couldn't stand him any longer. Thank God you had the courage to break away. If I'd had your sense, I wouldn't have sunk into Zalman's fishwife. But where could I find a place to live? I'm so burning to get on my own feet.
Bessie dropped her face in her hands.
Ach, I haven't even a little corner for my own sister, she groaned.
But Masha has no fish store. She has no stepchildren. Among your own, you can always squeeze yourself together.
Don't worry for me. I'm free from father's preaching. The rest will go like flying.
We fell into a silence. The air was full of voices. Great hopes beat in my heart like wings of flying things. But Bessie's sadness stopped the joy in me.
Many times I wanted to run like you, she sighed. But there's Benny.
So much I had to say to Bessie, but soon her head began to nod and we went in. Zalman was snoring so sound that we quietly stole a blanket from his bed, and Bessie and I slept together on the kitchen floor. The moment it was light, a worse yelling than that of the Yentas grabbing for fish broke loose in that house. 5 boys fighting each other, all trying to wash at the sink at one time, roused me from my dead sleep.
You little mutt, give me that soap, shouted Saul. It's mine. I had it first.
Saul snatched the soap out of Benny's hand, giving him such a push with his elbow that he went sprawling on the floor. At this, Big Dave kicked them out of his way and spread himself before the whole sink. He began splashing water on his face, humming a song from the street. Bessie put her hand to her ears, adding her shrieking to the noise.
Ay, ay, ay! Every morning I'm yelling at them, wash yourself 2 at a time. But they all rush together like wild animals. In our house we also had only 1 sink, but we didn't kill each other to be first.
Zalman ran in. Devils, stop this or I'll break the bones in your bodies and kick you out in the street.
He sat down and his angry eyes bulged at me.
Right after breakfast, home you go.
I'm not going home,
I said without looking up.
But you'll not stay here.
He pointed to Yenta, tying a red ribbon on her hair.
I got enough trouble on my hands with my own girl going wild. I don't want another Americaner in my house.
Drink your coffee,
Bessie urged, her eyes going out with her heart to me. But my throat closed up. I couldn't swallow another drop of Zalman's food.
Oh, how glad I was to get out of that house. Masha's clean little home flashed before me as I hurried away.
There would be no fighting, no yelling, no Zalman, and no fish smells. Only Masha's own little children, Danny, Ruthie, and the baby, to light up and make more beautiful the beautiful place. I pushed on through the crowd, so anxious to get to Masha that I saw nothing until someone stepped in front of me.
No, little sister, what a grand young lady you're getting to be.
And there was Mo Mirsky, Masha's husband, in a new checked suit, with a carefully folded blue-bordered handkerchief sticking out of his breast pocket. His freshly ironed trousers were turned up at the bottom, showing his silk socks and new patent leather shoes. Such a grand gentleman.
I'm going to Masha, I said, hurrying on.
At Masha's open door stood a milkman arguing with her.
You didn't pay last week's bill, and if you can't pay now, we'll have to stop the milk.
He lifted his rack of bottles and turned to go, but Masha grasped his arm imploringly.
I've got to have milk for my babies.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but I got babies of my own. If I don't turn in this collection, I'll lose my job.
I'll surely pay you next week.
You said that twice before. What's the matter? Ain't your husband working?
Masha's pale face turned red with guilt. Dumb with the shame of her poverty, her eyes dropped and then lifted, begging pity. But the milkman had already turned his back on her. Masha stared blindly into the dark hall, so stunned by her worries that she did not even see me.
To think that Mo Mirsky could shine like a prince of plenty while my sister's face was so black with want. There flashed before me a picture of her when she was a young girl, standing proud in the power of her beauty. And here she was, slapped in the face by an unpaid bill, and I had come hoping to make a home with her.
Is Mo out of work again? When I met him at the corner, he was blowing from himself like a millionaire.
At the sound of my voice, Masha looked up.
Sarah? You here? And you heard it all?
I nodded. Then I asked her again what her husband was doing.
Mo is working, all right. But he bought himself a new suit last week and a new overcoat this week, so there wasn't anything left for the house.
I followed Masha through into the kitchen. The gas was burning, although outside was still bright sunshine. The one window was closed up to a jammed-in tenement that shut out all light. But Masha had lit up the dingy darkness with her love for beauty. With her own hands, she had patched up the broken plaster on the walls and painted them a golden yellow. The rotten boards of the windowsill and the shelves were hidden by white oilcloth and held in place by shining brass tacks. The stove was painted silver. White curtains of the cheapest cheesecloth were on the one window, but hung with that grace that Masha put into anything she touched.
What patience you still have to keep things so beautiful, I said,
gazing in wonder at the bright corner behind the silvered stove where the scoured pots and pans from the 5- and 10-cent store hung in orderly rows from behind the polished brass hooks. And even her bits of wood from the broken boxes were laid in such an even, orderly pile that not a splinter shone on her spotless floor.
I couldn't stand it if I had to live in the dirt like the women around me. It's bad enough they shut out the light and let in the smells. But at least I can keep my own house clean.
Masha sank wearily on a stool and pointed to a chair for me to sit down. And now, as I looked at her, I saw what bloody toil it had cost to turn the dirt of poverty into this little palace of shining cleanliness. Beauty was in that house, but it had come out of Masha's face. The sunny color of her walls had taken the color out of her cheeks. The shine of her pots and pans had taken the luster out of her hair. And the soda with which she had scrubbed the floor so clean and laundered her